Rose frowned at Dave.
Didn't she drown in the gazebo? Why are you searching the hotel?
It's just a precaution. Some people reported seeing someone in the Wagtail Springs Hotel last night.
Who?
Demanded Rose. Dave exhaled. With a sheepish expression, he said, Becca Wraith. The merchant snickered.
A ghost. What are you expecting to find? Ghost? Fingerprints?
The other man exclaimed,
Oh, for crying out loud! My wife says she saw Becca Wraith's black panther walking along the street last night. People have gone Halloween crazy. They're seeing ghosts everywhere.
It's not that ridiculous, Dave protested. Mallory was dressed as Becca Wraith when she died. She might have been inside the hotel with someone. The door opened and Doc Kilgore peeked in.
Sorry I'm late.
He tucked a pair of glasses into the pocket of his blue plaid flannel shirt and took a seat next to Oma. Aunt Bertie sat up straighter and primly crossed her thin legs.
Doc, she said, Dave has just told us Mallory's death might not have been an accident.
Rose gazed at Doc Kilgore hopefully. Doc scratched the side of his face and winced.
Well now, Dave was one of my scouts. Always was a smart little fellow.
I glanced at Dave. Doc was talking about him like he was 12. I felt for him. People like Doc still saw him as a little boy.
Gotta say I'm right proud of him, but this time, said Doc, I'm afraid it's just a very sad accident. I've seen a lot of drownings in my time. There's no evidence of foul play. No sign of a struggle. Mallory has a hematoma on the back of her head. There are particles of bark in her wig, so it appears that she fell and hit her head before she made it into the gazebo. It all fits together. She was drunk, which caused her to fall. Then she became disoriented or confused, and that accounts for her being in the gazebo and unable to save herself when she hit the water. We're sending her to Roanoke, to the medical examiner's office, so we won't know anything more for a few days. I expect they'll find water in her lungs and evidence of intoxication.
In spite of my own doubts, Doc's position on the matter came as a relief. He made it sound so simple. Maybe it was.
Shameful, Bertie spouted. It's simply shameful that we have young women carousing about at night in Wagtail.
Then I don't see why we have to call off the ghost walk, said Rose. I'm as sick as everyone else about Mallory's death. She was a lovely young woman. But we can't shut down the town every time someone dies.
Dave, you just tell those men to be through sweeping the hotel by 8 o'clock tonight. That ought to be plenty of time for them to know if anything untoward happened in there. The walking tour doesn't take people into the gazebo anyway. We flash a light on it, but that's all.
I left the room before they took a vote, but I thought I could see where it was going. Zelda would be as relieved as I was by Doc's findings. Poor Dave needed to do his job, but he was under a lot of pressure from the merchants to keep up appearances and follow through on the advertised Halloween activities. Mallory could very well have been intoxicated. Val said the zombie brain drinks packed a punch. I called Trixie and found Gingersnap out on the front porch as usual. I laughed aloud when I realized she had settled next to a sign written in a bloody Halloween script, Beware of dog. Kisses. How about we get some lunch, Gingersnap? She readily accompanied us. It was late enough for a noontime crowd to have dwindled. I settled at the corner near the pass-through where Shelley picked up food. The cook opened it and saw me.
Pulled pork for all three of you?
Yes, please. Shelley deposited a tray of dishes to be washed, hurried over to my table, and slid into a chair.
Is it true?
Is what true?
That you found Mallory's body?
I'm afraid so. Was she a friend of yours?
I didn't know her. She came and went, I think.
Shelley fidgeted with the salt shaker.
I know we're not supposed to speak ill of the dead, but she was a little bit high on her horse.
What do you mean?
Well, just about everybody knows and loves Mark. He's outgoing and friendly, and he's been talking to a lot of us about the ghosts we've seen over the years. He fit in real well. Then, when Mallory came, she acted like she thought she was some kind of rock star or something and ran around town taking credit for Mark's book. I think it put folks off, you know?
The pass-through opened, and the cook slid 3 dishes onto the counter.
Y'all enjoy!
The window snapped shut. Shelley and I rose to collect the dishes. They looked like food for Goldilocks' 3 bears. The platter with the bun, coleslaw, and hush puppies was the largest. The smaller one was meant for Ginger Snap, and the tiny one belonged to Trixie.
"Hot tea or iced?" asked Shelley.
"Hot, thanks. I think I'm still a little chilled from last night." She brought a mug for me. "It must have been awful." I nodded. I was so focused on trying to save her that it really didn't sink in at that moment. Shelley studied her fingers for a second.
"What's wrong?"
In the softest whisper, Shelley asked, "Was she really murdered?"
"Where did you hear that?"
"People talk. Several reliable people reported seeing Becca Wraith's ghost at the Wagtail Springs Hotel this week." I laughed aloud. "Oh, Shelley, I'm sure that was some kind of advertising stunt for the tourists. You're so silly."
"Really? Why would they advertise at 2 a.m, the night of Mallory's death?"
No wonder Dave had the cops searching the hotel. Had Mallory managed to get inside and wander about? Why would she do that? I tried to make light of it so the rumor of murder wouldn't spread. That place is spooky just because it's empty. I'm not surprised that people think they see ghosts in the windows.
"Holly Miller, one day you'll see a real ghost and sing a different tune. Just you wait. Wish I could sit and chat longer. I still have a few customers, though."
I ate my lunch while Gingersnap and Trixie watched me with hopeful eyes.
"There you are,"
Oma said, bustling over with Rose.
"I need a strong cup of tea. How about you, Rose?"
"Make mine strong coffee, Liesel. I have a long night ahead of me."
Oma disappeared into the kitchen while Rose sat down with me.
"I'm so relieved that the ghost walk won't be canceled. Honestly, you'd think it would be easy to set up a ghost walk, but there are always complications."
Oma returned with mugs of coffee and tea, as well as sugar and cream, and a platter of pumpkin whoopie pies with shapes cut out of the tops so that the white filling showed through like a ghost.
"This is much more relaxing than eating at the meeting."
"I thought your first meeting went very well, Liesel."
Rose doctored her coffee with cream.
"Overall, I can't complain. Everyone was most cooperative. It's you who has the problem now."
"Liesel, don't bother Holly with our headaches. For heaven's sake, she's just arrived."
Rose ate a bit of whoopie pie, taking great care not to look at Oma. Oma poured cream into her tea.
"It wouldn't interest Holly anyway."
"Exactly. It's not her sort of thing," said Rose.
"I could smell a plot afoot. You do realize that I'm right here?"
"Of course we do, Liebling."
Oma smiled at me.
"We'll work something out, Rose."
I took a deep breath. Why did they feel they had to bait me?
"Why don't you just tell me?"
"You see, Mallory was going to help us with the ghost walk."
Rose placed a hand on her chest and heaved a huge sigh.
"It's tonight, and it's important that we pull it off well, because we've been advertising it just everywhere, and now, at the last minute, I have to find a replacement for Mallory."
"That didn't sound too bad. What was she supposed to do? Maybe I can fill in for her."
"No."
Oma sipped her tea.
"If only so many people hadn't gone to the dog show,"
Rose complained. Oma lifted her hand in a gesture of hopelessness.
"Maybe one of my employees could do it."
I sucked in a deep breath, but couldn't hold back my grin.
"You two are terrible actresses. What do you want me to do?"
With feigned innocence, Oma said,
You know, maybe Holly is the right person for this. She doesn't believe in ghosts, so she wouldn't be afraid.
That's right. I forgot all about that.
Rose smiled at me sweetly. Forgot my foot. They knew exactly what they were doing. Rose reached for the shopping bag and handed it to me.
You are the sweetest person in the whole world to volunteer, Holly.
She met my eyes.
I should warn you, though. There are ghosts haunting the Wagtail Springs Hotel.
What a show they had put on. They had everything ready and waiting for me. I peered in the bag. A long white wig and a crown of black roses lay on top.
Becca Wraith? You want me to dress as the ghost of Becca Wraith?
8.
It's easy, sweetheart, said Rose. You'll have fun. You just flit up to the windows like a ghost when you hear me talking about Becca. There's nothing to it.
I had to yank her chain a little bit. You're afraid real ghosts won't show up for the ghost walk, so you have to ask people to pretend to be ghosts? Rose answered sincerely. You just never know about ghosts. Sometimes they show and other times they don't. I'll leave the bag with your costume in the Wagtail Springs Hotel, upstairs in room 10. That way you can go on part of the ghost walk with us. She bestowed another sunny smile on me. But don't blame me if the real ghost of Becca Wraith shows up for tonight's performance. Yeah, like that was going to happen. After they left, it dawned on me that I hadn't asked Oma about Clementine. I was on my way to find Oma when I met Eva in the lobby walking Mrs. Muir on a leash. We had the best time this morning, she raved. I took Mrs. Muir to the cat park. It's so clever the way they set it up with moving mice and pretend birds. She absolutely loved it. Then we had brunch at a darling cafe. I thought the poor baby would be locked in my room all the time. I couldn't have been more wrong. Felix, Casper, and Brian were just coming down the grand staircase. Are you headed for Mark's house? Felix asked Eva. She adjusted her glasses. I don't believe I was invited. There aren't any invitations, Brian blurted. We're going to pay our respects. Eva frowned at him. Respects? Who died? Mallory, said Brian. Eva stared at him. That's not funny. I'm afraid it's true, Eva, said Felix. She died last night, or early this morning, I guess. Eva blinked hard, and then she crumpled into a heap on the floor, landing on Mrs. Muir's tail. Mrs. Muir yowled and raced down the hallway, dragging her leash behind her. I knelt beside Eva and said her name softly. She didn't respond and appeared to be out cold. I tapped her cheeks. Eva? Additional ghost hunters clustered behind Brian and Felix, asking what had happened. The dogs milled around their legs, sensing the tension. Shelley must have seen Eva faint, because she broke through the little crowd to hand me a wet cloth. I dabbed Eva's face. She blinked several times and groaned. Can you sit up? I asked. She reached out one hand. I slid my arm around her and helped her to a sitting position. For a few minutes, she remained on the floor, refusing all assistance. Trixie reached her head toward Eva's and licked her nose.
Okay, thanks, Trixie. I think I'll be fine.
Eva was wobbly when she stood, but managed to make her way to a sofa in the sitting room. I leaned over to her and asked very softly, Would you rather I helped you to your room?
Good heavens, no. Please don't fuss. To tell the truth, I'm thoroughly embarrassed. I've never fainted before. I'm quite sure I'll be fine. Thank you, Holly.
She adjusted her glasses using both hands, her fingers extended. The worry in her face made me want to reach out to hug her. She jolted forward and jumped up unsteadily.
Where's Mrs. Muir?
Felix came to the rescue. We'll look for her. She couldn't have gone far. Everybody spread out and look for a Siamese cat. Eva stumbled toward the front door, frantically chanting, Mrs. Muir!
Here, kitty, kitty, kitty.
Felix murmured, Oh man, she's lost it. You'd probably do the same for Casper. You go that way, and I'll look upstairs.
Deal.
10 minutes later, I was back in the dining area, but we still had no clue where Mrs. Muir had gone.
Can you find the kitty? I asked Trixie. Do you know where she is?
Shelley was setting up for tea. Do you hear something? What is that? We tiptoed to the lobby. Eva was in the dogwood room bawling. I sat down next to her on the couch and let her cry on my shoulder.
It's my fault. I never should have let go of her leash. I never should have brought her here. I never should have come at all. This is all my fault.
I could understand her distress. I didn't think it was quite so hopeless, though. Chances were pretty good that Mrs. Muir was still inside the inn somewhere. But I let Eva cry because I had a strong suspicion that it wasn't just Mrs. Muir that had upset her. She sniffled and pulled away.
I'm so sorry. You're really a stranger to me. Thank you for being so kind.
I didn't know what to say. You're welcome. Seems so wrong. Do you want to talk about it?
I want to find Mrs. Muir.
The torrent of tears began again. Grayson, Felix, and Casper appeared in the lobby. Felix held up his hands and shrugged. Of course you do. I bet she's hiding somewhere in the inn. She was probably scared when you fainted. I avoided mentioning that she fell on Mrs. Muir's tail, fearing that would set off more guilt and tears. Felix inched closer, evidently feeling awkward.
You know, Mark is a friend of mine, too.
He is?
She sniffled. Grayson took a seat, his elbows on his knees, his face turned toward the floor. Felix sat near Eva.
We were college roommates. He's a great guy. I can't believe Mallory is dead. Mark must be flipping out.
Eva nodded. Was she holding her breath?
Did you work with Mark? Asked Felix.
Sort of. We met when he was investigating some haunted manor houses in England.
Felix's eyes widened in surprise.
Cool. I've done a few of those. Did you know Mallory?
This is so tragic. Do you know her family story?
Eva sniffled and nodded a tissue. Her face screwed up.
It's so sad.
Grayson wiped his eyes with his fingers. When Mallory was 14, her father and brother died in a boating accident. You can imagine how horrible that was. Her mother couldn't take it, and a month later, Mallory came home from school to find her mother had intentionally overdosed.
She was shipped from relative to relative, said Eva. I can't believe that their family saga ended this way.
It's like they were cursed, said Grayson.
Felix seemed at a loss.
I talked with her last night. She was so happy.
Felix rubbed his face with both palms. He looked at me when he said,
Mark is a trust fund baby from an Oklahoma oil family. You'd never know it. He acts like a regular guy, but he's filthy rich.
Must be nice, said Grayson. My grandfathers were missing in action.
Both of them? Vietnam? Asked Felix.
That's not what I meant. They were just absentee. We never saw them. My parents went through a nasty divorce when I was just a baby. My mom took my sister and me, started a new life, and in the ensuing bitterness, cut off all contact with my dad's family. Then my dad died.
Good grief, said Felix. Your life sounds like a Greek tragedy.
It wasn't that bad, Grayson grinned. My mom remarried, and my stepdad adopted us. But my mom's dad had alcohol issues that brought on an estrangement between them, so I never knew my grandfathers. He shrugged. Standard family dysfunction, you know? Grayson thought for a moment. Funny. I've known Mark for a few years, but he's never driven a fancy car or been a flashy kind of guy. Eva nodded.
He's so grounded, not at all pretentious.
A smile briefly twitched over Felix's lips.
His grandfather wasn't happy with the laziness and financial demands of his own children,
So he set up trusts for the grandchildren that they would get on whichever event happened first. They got a doctorate or turned 60. I always thought he must have been a pretty sharp guy. Of course, they all did graduate work to get their money, so he had a bunch of grandchildren who were very well educated. I smiled. Pretty clever of Gramps.
Mark is a physicist, said Felix, which is great because he thinks about ghosts in a different way.
Was Mallory a physicist too? I asked.
Felix shrugged. She was a psychic. She said something about being an assistant manager of a store. A girly kind of store. Accessories or something.
A psychic? Asked Grayson.
Eva tilted her head. Not a very good one. She relied on a lot of guesses and mostly parroted back what people wanted to hear.
I don't get it, said Grayson.
Eva sniffled, but raised both of her hands, palms outward. I'm getting the letter M. Who had someone pass over with that initial? It's a grandmother, or possibly an aunt.
Grayson sat up straighter. Okay, now you're freaking me out. My aunt's name started with an M.
Eva sighed. She loved you very much. She's telling me what fun she had reading to you.
Grayson gasped.
And I'm seeing cookies. Chocolate, maybe?
How could you know that? Asked Grayson.
It was our thing to bake chocolate chip cookies, and she always read to me. Are you psychic?
Felix laughed.
In most groups of people, it's a good bet that someone has lost a grandparent. Eva expanded that by adding an aunt. She used one of the most common initials, M. Other likely initials are A, C, S, and J.
But the cookies in the reading, protested Grayson.
Eva shrugged. A good guess. That's what a lot of aunts and grandmothers do, and everyone wants to hear they were loved.
Grayson sat back. Ah, now you've taken the fun out of it.
I called Mark this morning, said Felix. They're sending Mallory for an autopsy, so he doesn't know when she'll be buried. Luciano is giving everyone the opportunity to withdraw from the show, but everybody is here, and we signed contracts and everything.
He heaved another big breath.
It sounds so uncaring for life to go on.
He rubbed the back of his neck.
That really bothers me, but it's not like calling off the ghost hunt would bring Mallory back.
I was glad Grayson had taken Eva's mind off of Mrs. Muir. It wouldn't be long before she remembered, though.
Why don't you three talk while I take care of a few things?
As I walked away with Trixie, Eva asked,
Felix, what happened? How did Mallory die?
Trixie and I walked from one end of the inn to the other, starting on the top floor and ending in the basement. Unless someone had invited Mrs. Muir into a guest room, which was always a possibility, she had either escaped the inn or was curled up somewhere. When I reached the reception desk, I took a few minutes to print notices that said, "Do not let cats out." I taped one on the glass door in reception and another on the front door. We took Casper along with us when we walked around the outside of the inn. Mrs. Muir wasn't on the porch with Gingersnap, but Grayson had moved outside. He sat in a rocking chair staring at his hands. You okay? I asked, perching on the chair next to him.
Yeah, it's just, wow! You don't expect things like this to happen.
You knew her well?
No, but I just spent the last couple of days with her and Mark. She liked to hang out with ghost hunters. It's just mind-boggling that she was fine a few hours before, and then she's drowned.
Mr. Luciano would probably let you go home.
Grayson nodded. I know, but I can't let the other guys down. A TV show is probably the biggest thing that ever happened to them. And there's the possibility of a series. I can't walk out on it.
He massaged Casper's ears. Let me know if there's anything I can do.
Did you find Eva's cat?
Not yet. I was just going to look outside the inn, just in case she managed to sneak past someone. We left him to his thoughts of Mallory and walked around the property. Mrs. Muir wasn't lounging in the sun on the back terraces. If she had climbed a tree or nestled somewhere, the dogs showed no sign of noticing her. When I returned, Grayson had fetched Zelda. All eyes were on her as she rotated a hand under her chin.
I see her. Mrs. Muir says she's scared. She found a place to hide.
Where is she? Asked Eva eagerly. I couldn't help wondering what had happened to the woman who didn't believe in psychics. Now that her cat was lost, she certainly had a different attitude toward Zelda's alleged powers.
All I see is white walls, said Zelda. Maybe a closet or a corner someplace.
Doesn't she miss me? Tell her I want her to come back.
Zelda smiled at Eva very kindly.
She loves you, too, but right now she wants to hide for a little bit.
Eva, I said, if you want to go with the guys to pay your respects, I'll stick around and keep an eye out for Mrs. Muir. Eva sucked in a sharp breath of air.
No, oh, no, 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 I'll stay here. Maybe Mrs. Muir will come out of hiding when everyone is gone and it's quiet.
Felix took the cue, collected the ghost hunters, and herded them out the front door. In mere seconds, the inn fell silent. Shelley very thoughtfully appeared with a tray bearing a cup of tea and a platter of the pumpkin whoopie pies. She set it on the table in front of Eva.
Let me know if there's anything you need, sugar.
Shelley, Trixie, and I left Eva sitting in the dogwood room. I looked back at her as we walked away. She heaved deep breaths and stared at the floor. The hand that clutched a tissue shook slightly. Shelley whispered, I hope that cat shows up soon. The afternoon tea crowd will start trickling in before long. The noise and commotion might scare her even more. I spent the next few hours installing the new deadbolt on the kitchen door. Trixie stretched out on the floor for a nap, and Twinkletoes curled up on the fireplace hearth. Neither of them appeared to be one bit disturbed by the annoying sound of the drill or the battery-operated screwdriver. I hoped the noise wasn't keeping Mrs. Muir away. At 5 o'clock, dogs, cats, and people in costumes gathered in front of the inn for a Halloween yappy hour. Although the inn didn't serve cocktails at yappy hour, the town permitted people to bring their drinks to the porch of the inn to watch the parade. Oma insisted I join in with Trixie, dressed in her Tootsie Roll outfit, and Ginger Snap, who wore a big furry ruff around her neck that made her look like a lion. It didn't take a dog psychic like Zelda to know that the dogs were having fun. They pranced around, wagging their tails and showing off their finery. A black and white mutt wore a skunk jacket, a Doberman had donned a vampire cape, and a boxer was dressed as a pirate, complete with a live parrot riding on his hat. I recognized a Kern Terrier dressed as Dorothy, a host of doggy witches, a ladybug, a bee, and several little devils with red horns. Lillian marched in the parade with Glory Bee. They wore matching witches' hats and black capes adorned with flashy rhinestones and black feathers. The cats held their own, too, though many of them were being carried in the parade. They wore witches' hats, pumpkin outfits, mouse get-ups. One even came wearing Cleopatra hair with a faux asp attached to her collar. As silly as it seemed, I thoroughly enjoyed it. There wasn't a single person in the parade who didn't smile or laugh. For that short time, I didn't think about Mallory. I chatted with people about their cats and dogs, and my mouth muscles hurt from grinning. When the costume judging began, I beat a hasty exit lest Trixie or Ginger Snap should win. After all, we were locals. The prizes should go to visitors. We returned to the inn, where the ghost hunters watched from the porch, cocktails in hand. Ryan and Grayson caught me coming up the steps and applauded.
I'm sorry Felix missed that, said Brian. It would have brightened his day.
Where is Felix? I asked.
He's skipping dinner tonight, said Grayson. He wasn't hungry, Eva either.
I didn't want to be a pain in the neck, but decided to take them something to eat anyway. It was the least I could do. After helping Trixie and Gingersnap out of their costumes, I loaded up a room service cart with piping hot macaroni and cheese,
a bowl of Oma's goulash, fruit, and our onion-free goulash doggy dinner for Casper, the ghost dog. I knocked on Felix's door. "It's open." He said it in a weak, resigned tone, but I was certain I'd heard him. I rolled the cart inside. Mark was slumped in the chair by the fireplace, staring at the blaze. Felix straddled a desk chair that he had turned around. Casper jumped to his feet and strolled over to greet Trixie. I shoved the cart next to Felix's chair. "I brought you some dinner." He glanced up at me. "We're not really hungry." "I'm so sorry for your loss, Mark."
"Thanks. I hope you don't mind, but I'm hiding out here with Felix for a while. People keep coming to my place."
"He's got enough food to feed the whole ghost hunting team for a week," said Felix. Mark ran a hand through his hair. "Mr. Luciano is dedicating the show to Mallory."
"That's a very thoughtful gesture."
He didn't respond. "I can understand if you're not hungry. I brought dinner for Casper, too. Just let me know if you need anything." I turned to leave. Felix jumped up and said, "Holly?"
"Yes."
He followed me to the door and gestured toward the hallway. We walked out of the room, and he closed the door.
9.
Unsure what Felix wanted to talk about, I thought it best to wait and let him fill the dead air. He chewed on his lower lip. "Mark says the place where Mallory drowned isn't deep."
"It's not."
Felix gazed around uncomfortably.
Then how could she have drowned? Why didn't she stand up, or sit, or something?"
I wasn't sure how much to say.
"Doc thinks she was too drunk."
Felix nodded and studied the floor. "We all drank too much last night. I guess that could explain a lot of things. Mallory flirted with me."
"I noticed that. Seemed odd to be so obvious in front of Mark."
A worried V formed between Felix's eyebrows. "Mark insists they broke up ages ago."
"That's odd. Wasn't she staying with him? She was asking about having their wedding here."
His eyebrows squeezed tighter together.
"That doesn't jibe with what Mark says."
He squinted at me.
"Why would she be interested in me if she was planning to marry Mark? I'm not the kind of guy women chase. I don't have Brian's ease and jolliness, or Mark's cool guy flair, or Grayson's fame."
"Fame?"
"He was a heartthrob on one of those reality TV shows. I never saw it, but he acts like it was a big deal."
He shrugged.
"I guess it was. A couple of people recognized him last night."
Ben, my last boyfriend, had been a geeky guy like Felix. Although Oma didn't like him, and he hadn't even bothered to call since I decided to move, he had his good sides. "Don't put yourself down. You're very charming." He finally looked over at me, a half smile on his face.
"Yeah?
Absolutely. Zelda is quite taken by you."
"Really?"
His face lit up. "I hope you'll come to the ghost walk. Casper probably needs to get out for a bit, and I know Zelda will be there."
Felix scuffed the toe of his shoe against the floor.
"It feels wrong to do anything fun, you know? Is it just me, or does something not seem right about all of this? Do you think Mallory was murdered?"
My breath caught in my throat. I looked him straight in the eyes.
"Why would you ask such a thing?"
"Officer Dave woke me up this morning. I don't think he would have done that if he didn't suspect someone killed her. He came to my room and asked me questions about Mallory and what happened last night. I guess it could have been in the regular course of business, but he didn't give me that impression."
Conflicting thoughts ran through my head. The official verdict was that Mallory's death had been accidental. Even if I had my doubts about it, shouldn't I stick to what I'd been told, rather than spout my own suspicions?
"Doc Kilgore says it was an accident, probably due to intoxication."
Felix nodded his head and studied his shoes for a moment.
"Thanks for the dinner, Holly. I'll see you later."
He returned to Mark while Trixie and I headed back to the kitchen. But Felix's words lingered with me. Does something seem not right about all this? It was exactly what I had been feeling. I fetched another cart with mac and cheese and goulash and pushed it through the library to the cat wing. Surprisingly, Eva's door hung open. I rapped on it anyway. Eva? Like a mirror image of Mark, she sat in the chair by a blazing fire, but she jumped up when I said her name.
Have you found Mrs. Muir?
Not yet. I'm so sorry. I brought you dinner. You really should eat something. Her shoulders drooped, and she dropped into the chair.
I apologize. I'm usually not such a quivering mess. Mrs. Muir's everything to me. She's like my baby.
I understand completely. Trixie was lost the last time I was here, and it tore me up. She plucked at the fabric of her skirt.
Holly, you're the only one I can talk to about this. You don't believe all that nonsense about ghosts, right?
No, of course not. In a voice so tiny I could barely hear her, she asked,
Have you ever had complaints about odd lights in this room?
Not that I'm aware of, I hastened to add. This is a new addition. It's not as though anyone died here or anything. At least not that I knew of. Did something happen?
There was a light in the room last night. I'm used to orbs and photographs, of course. They're usually just insects or particles of dust, and people want to imagine that there's something more. But this was a round light. It must be some kind of reflection. I can't figure out where it came from.
It wasn't my imagination. Mrs. Muir saw it, too. I'm usually adept at finding the source, but this time I couldn't. Oh, boy. I didn't know whether she needed my assurance that it must have had some earthly origin, or if she wanted confirmation that it could have been something else. Probably the former.
I walked around outside, said Eva, thinking it must surely be a light from a neighboring building, but there isn't anything back there. Just a clearing for bird feeders and then woods. There has to be a rational explanation. There just has to be.
Her voice rose in agitation, alarming me. She seized my hand.
You were there. Do you think Mallory was murdered?
I drew in a sharp breath and pulled my hand back. They all thought the same thing.
Why do you ask that?
She sagged back against the chair.
Mallory didn't need a pointy hat and a broom to be a witch,
she snorted in derision. A rustling sound caught my attention. I turned to see that Twinkletoes had jumped into a huge Vera Bradley tote. She dug deeper until only the tip of her fluffy black tail was visible. I was about to dart over to her when Eva reached backward and caught my arm.
Have you heard anything? It was an accident, right?
Her questions caught me off guard. Here I was again, stuck between Doc Kilgore's official line that Mallory's death had probably been a terrible mishap and my own instinct that it wasn't accidental. What if Felix and I were right, and she had been murdered? Obviously, I wasn't the only one with doubts about a vibrant young woman drowning in shallow water. Are you saying that someone wanted to kill Mallory? I watched her reflection in the mirror. Her eyes rose slowly to study me in the mirror. She released her grip.
No. No, I'm not saying that at all.
I wanted to like Eva. But at that moment, I knew without a doubt that she was lying. She nearly burbled in her haste to change the subject. I'm being absurd. I have to find the explanation for that light in the room. I don't think you're being ridiculous at all. I shot a glare at Twinkletoes, not that it mattered, because she had already left the bag and now prowled through the room, her tail high like a waving flag. If you see the light again, why don't you call me and maybe the two of us can figure it out, I offered. All orbs have logical, rational, earthly explanations. I'll find the source.
Thank you for bringing me dinner and setting me straight.
You're so welcome,
I'll see you at the ghost walk?
Yes.
She closed her eyes and leaned her head back against the chair. It was the perfect opportunity to catch Twinkletoes. She pawed at something under the dressing table chair. I tiptoed toward her, bent over, and like a flash of white lightning, she flew from the room with something clenched between her teeth. Oh, great. I hurried after her, but hadn't even made it to the door when Eva said,
"Holly, leave the door open, will you? I'm hoping Mrs. Muir will come back."
Leaving the door ajar just enough for a cat to pass through, I dashed into the library. Twinkletoes was lying on the window seat, but jumped up when she saw me. It was a standoff. I knew perfectly well what would happen next. She understood that I was after whatever she had stolen. As soon as I neared, she would seize it and scamper off again. I edged toward her slowly, trying to see what she had. A turquoise catnip mouse. For heaven's sake, she'd stolen a toy from Mrs. Muir. No problem. I could replace that. I chuckled under my breath as I passed her and headed to the kitchen for yogurt to sustain me while I played ghost. By 8:30 that evening, the sun had vanished behind the mountain. Orange and purple Halloween lights decorated stores and restaurants. People, dogs, and cats walked along the pedestrian zone under the streetlights and gathered on the plaza in front of the Sugar Maple Inn. The moon cast a golden beam strong enough for me to make out scary goblins and cute dogs waiting to go on the ghost walk. I watched from the front porch with Trixie securely attached to a leash so she wouldn't wander. Zelda shooed us to the plaza. Her body-serving wench costume should certainly get Felix's attention. Her curvy figure filled it out perfectly.
"Rose is about to begin," she whispered before she hurried off.
Framed by garlands of fall leaves, Rose stood on a lighted porch at the top of the steps. Clusters of pumpkins and purple mums added cheerful color to the side of the stairs. Giant crows perched on the pumpkins that decorated the porch. I chuckled at two skeletons happily seated on rocking chairs. One of them held a leash that led to a faux skeleton of a dog. Spooky bats dangled from the porch roof and appeared to flit around in a light breeze. Without warning, the porch lights went out. A small beam glowed just beneath Rose's chin, giving lovely Rose a haunted appearance and emphasizing the green cast to her makeup. The stars on her kinked witch's hat glowed in the dark, as did the horizontal stripes on her tights. In a crackly voice, she said, "Welcome to all, but beware, for Wagtail is home to many ghosts." She pointed a crooked forefinger at someone in the crowd. "You dare to snicker? This tour is not for the feeble or the easily spooked." 10. Zelda pushed a cart across the plaza in front of us, handing out lanterns and lighting the candles inside them. Felix, Mark, Grayson, and Brian wedged next to me to take lanterns. Felix's eyes met Zelda's, and they both grinned. A spark. But why was Mark on the ghost tour? I guessed that people grieve differently. Maybe Felix coaxed him to come along, just to distract him for a while. After all, he was presumably Wagtail's foremost authority on ghosts. He might have even helped Rose prepare for the ghostly happenings in Wagtail. I glanced down at Trixie. Casper nuzzled her like they were already old friends.
"The year is 1885, said Rose. "In the dark of night, the only lights in Wagtail come from gas lamps."
She pointed her finger toward the sky as if casting a spell. At that moment, the streetlights dimmed, and if I hadn't known better, I would have sworn they had gas flames. The crowd gasped.
"Follow me, my dears, if you dare." Rose cackled so wickedly that a chill shivered through me.
Who knew that Sweet Rose could sound so devilish? Carrying lanterns, we fell in behind her as she led the way through Wagtail, stopping at various houses to tell ghostly tales. The residents of the homes along our route had agreed to play the game by turning off most of their electric lights. Menacing pumpkins leered at us. Chains rattled and eerie moans issued from some houses. Ghosts peered out of windows and witches guarded porches. Dogs barked everywhere, not surprising in Wagtail, but some howled, and at one house an organ played music worthy of an old Christopher Lee movie, accompanied by a mournful howl that elicited sympathy howls from the dogs in our group, including Trixie and Casper. Dry leaves rustled underfoot, and a gust, as though prearranged, kicked them up now and then. In between two locations, I noticed Mark walking with Eva, and I found myself with Lillian and Glory B, Grayson, Felix and Casper, and Brian. "Thanks for the dinner, Holly," said Felix. "That was really nice of you." I was afraid to ask if Mark was feeling better. How could he be? Mallory's death had to be a shock to him. I changed to another subject. "Are you supposed to hear all this? Don't you go to haunted houses cold, without knowing the background?" Felix shrugged. "We usually do research before we visit a haunted building. It's not like we're psychics who are supposed to figure out what happened. We're just checking for paranormal phenomena." Felix squinted toward a cat on a fence. "They've done a great job here. Seriously, I can't tell if that's a real cat or a prop. This must be incredibly scary for kids who trick-or-treat." The cat meowed as we walked by, but I still wasn't sure if it was real either. In any case, it wasn't a Siamese. "Wagtail has to be a hotbed of paranormal activity." Brian spoke eagerly, as though he could barely contain himself. "Have you been here before?" I asked. Brian shook his head. "This is all new territory for us, but Luciano hit it right this time. We're bound to find something." "People used to come here for the mineral springs, right?" asked Felix. "It only stands to reason that a good number of them were sick and died here." "These streets are probably teeming with spirits right now." Brian held his lantern higher as though he thought he might see them. That creeped me out a little bit. Outside of the Halloween decorations, I didn't see anything unusual, though. Do you see them?
"It's not like that. Most of them are going about their business. But once in a while, one might touch your shoulder, or you'll feel a cold whiff of air. That's a ghost brushing by you."
I shivered again in spite of myself, even though I knew a whiff of cold air was easily explained by something as common as a breeze.
"Our main focus is on the Wagtail Springs Hotel."
Brian peered at me.
"Know anything about it? Maybe we could have a drink later tonight and you could fill me in."
I might not believe in ghosts, but the Wagtail Springs Hotel could send chills down anyone's spine. It's definitely creepy, like most unoccupied buildings. "You're a skeptic, aren't you?" asked Felix. "I'm sorry." It was just as well that they knew. I wouldn't have to keep up pretenses.
"Don't apologize," said Felix. "I was too."
"What changed your mind?"
"A few years back, I was staying in an English castle with very aristocratic and stiff upper lip sort of people when the cook rushed out of the kitchen in a panic. Naturally, we hurried into the kitchen, and it was the strangest thing I've ever seen. Cookbooks were hurling through the air. The cook had a roast in the oven, but that kitchen was as cold as a freezer. Naturally, I assumed the flying cookbooks were a setup for the benefit of the guests, and the kitchen was cold because castles aren't insulated. All that stone, you know? But I went back in the morning to look around in daylight. The temperature was perfectly normal."
"Did you check to see if the cookbooks were rigged?"
"Naturally. I'm a scientist by training, so I'm not prone to believe every silly thing. But I examined those books very carefully. They were perfectly normal. No strings attached, no holes or weights or evidence of, well, anything."
That was the event that triggered my interest. So you think because you couldn't see any other mechanism, that meant a ghost was throwing the books? I couldn't help being doubtful. Felix grinned at me.
That's the old argument. How do we know it was a ghost if we don't have the tangible evidence of one? We can't blame everything we don't understand on the paranormal. I get that, which is why I find it all so fascinating.
I liked Felix. He wasn't defensive about his position on ghosts. He clearly gave it a lot of thought and wasn't prone to jumping to conclusions. I excused myself and pretended to fall back to speak to someone else. When everyone gathered to hear the next ghost tale, I sprinted away with Trixie and cut through the streets to the dark and gloomy Wagtail Springs Hotel. On the front porch, I held up my lantern to see where I was going. The door screeched when I opened it. The hotel had fallen into disuse a long time ago, so I expected the worst. Candles flickered in the lobby. I shrieked at the sight of another person and felt incredibly stupid when I realized my own reflection in a strategically placed mirror had scared me. The glass bore veins of age and a creepy film. It probably frightened everyone who entered. Rose's committee had done a splendid job of decorating the old inn for Halloween. I guessed it was for the upcoming costume gala. Cobwebs hung where they would have brushed the tops of some heads. Spiders crawled up the registration desk. Scary hands reached out of the old-fashioned cubbies where keys and mail would have been held for guests. In spite of all that, the thing that surprised me the most was the perfect condition of the building. Behind the decorations, the walls didn't appear to be dingy or ruined at all. The ornate registration desk had been carefully restored, walnut, I guessed, with six beautifully carved panels across the front depicting deer. Someone had cleaned it up quite nicely. In daylight, I bet the old hotel wasn't one bit scary inside. Trixie tugged toward a hallway that led to the back. The group would be arriving soon, though. No time for exploring now, Trixie. We hurried up the stairs and easily found room number 10. Exactly as promised, the bag with the Becca Wraith costume awaited us. I closed and locked the door, just in case other faux ghosts were roaming the hotel for the show, and set the lantern on a dresser, wondering why there would even be a dresser and a plastic-covered mattress in the room. It was as though someone had planned to open the hotel. I unsnapped the leash so Trixie could sniff around. Rose must have had the dress custom made by someone in town. Had Mallory sewn her own costume? Maybe Becca had become so popular that they could be bought off the rack in Wagtail. Panels of gleaming satin comprised the skirt of the white gown. The top had been studded with sparkles that caught the light. But over the top of the dress, a gauzy fabric had been made to appear dirty. The sleeves were slightly shredded, as though it had been buried underground for a long time. I coiled my milk chocolate brown hair into a loose bun on top of my head and wiggled the long white wig over it, much as Mallory must have done the night before. I assumed I was to apply the white makeup in the bag. I smeared it on, checking my progress in the mirror over the dresser. It caused the skin around my eyes to appear dark and haunted. The ring of black roses turned out to be real. Where on earth did they find black roses to dry? I set it on my head carefully and finished the costume by pulling on white gloves. The dress dragged along the floor when I walked, which I imagined was the look they had wanted. Through the glass door to the upper-level porch, I could see the lanterns of the ghost walkers nearing in the distance. Leaving Trixie safely in the room, I stepped out onto the porch. A mist rose around me, and someone in the approaching crowd screamed. I assumed it was because of me. How would a ghost walk? Stiffly, perhaps? That didn't seem right. Maybe they floated gracefully. I drifted along the length of the porch slowly, barely picking up my feet. Taking a cue from Rose, I carried the lantern low, hoping the light would diffuse, making me look more ethereal. My other hand hung limp. As they gathered below, I disappeared into room 10 again. Rose probably should have given me cues so I would know when to appear in the windows. No matter, I would just have to wing it. I opened the door to the hallway and peered down the corridor. I assumed I was supposed to show up in different windows. Thankfully, I could hear her speaking. The most famous haunted structure in these mountains is the Wagtail Springs Hotel. While you may wish to think there are no such thing as ghosts, no matter what you believe, the facts of this tragedy remain historically accurate. Faux candles suddenly switched on in the corridor behind me. Rose spoke in a slow, calm voice. During the Civil War, Dr. Ira Wraith converted the Wagtail Springs Hotel into a hospital for the few lucky souls who managed to survive the long trip up the mountain. Dr. Wraith's daughter, Becca, was known far and wide for her astonishing beauty. Aha, my name. I should probably make an appearance. I stumbled over the long gown in my hurry to approach on the porch. Raven locks tumbled down her back, and her eyes were said to be bluer than the twilight sky of the harvest moon. Suitors came and went, none winning the hand of the lovely Becca, until the day Hiram Montague came to Wagtail to study medicine under the tutelage of her father. Becca and Hiram fell in love immediately and soon planned to marry. I faded away by walking backward and nearly tripping again. Picking up my skirt, I walked to the far room, planning to appear on the porch when it seemed appropriate. But it dawned on me that no one was screaming when I appeared. Maybe I was supposed to go downstairs. In a low voice, I called Trixie. She was digging for something between the mattress and the wall. "Leave that alone," I hissed. "Come on, Trixie." Lifting the skirt, I tried to glide down the stairs. A good move. The front door hung open, and a machine spewed a mysterious fog. I heard people gasp outside. Rose's tone became ominous. "But the devil arrived in Wagtail, in the guise of snake oil salesman Obadiah Bagley." I raised my arms to seem like I was misty, and peered out a window. This time someone screamed. Oddly enough, while I had heard the story of Obadiah Bagley as a child, I never gave any thought to its authenticity. Had these things really happened in Wagtail? Maybe the core of the story had, but the ghost part must have grown out of folklore as it was repeated. I backed away again and headed for another room. Rose continued. "Obadiah quickly made a name for himself when his magical elixir cured the snake bites of several hunters. People flocked to him to buy his potion as a cure for all that ailed them. But Dr. Wraith cautioned them and denounced Obadiah as a dangerous quack. Unfortunately, Obadiah set his sights on the doctor's beautiful daughter. He went to Becca's father and asked for her hand in marriage. The angry and distraught doctor refused. In a stormy argument, Dr. Wraith threw Obadiah out, exactly where I stand right now." 11. There wasn't another sound, as though everyone was entranced. Rose continued the story. Embarrassed and humiliated, Obadiah disappeared. Naturally, everyone thought they were done with him. A tremor tinged Rose's voice. 2 days later, on All Hallows' Eve, the day of her wedding, undoubtedly my cue, I walked to the window. Becca perfumed herself with lavender and wore a ring of pink roses in her hair. That morning, a black panther guarded the door to the bathhouse.
Dr. Wraith shot over his head to frighten him, and the animal ran to the woods. The doctor discovered Obadiah's lifeless body floating in the mineral bath behind the Wagtail Springs Hotel. Becca rushed to see him and broke through the crowds of townspeople that tried to detain her from the grisly sight. Before their very eyes, Becca's raven locks turned completely white from the fright. This time I slammed into the window and was rewarded by several screams. I pulled back and searched for another window. In spite of the horrific death of Obadiah, Hiram insisted the wedding proceed. It was the social event of the year in Wagtail. Everyone had turned out dressed in their finest. She paused. Everyone but Becca. The bride never showed up to her own wedding. Becca left Hiram standing alone at the altar, broken-hearted. Rose let the impact sink in before she continued. While townspeople gathered for her wedding, Becca returned to the site of Obadiah's death, where she discovered a brass button with the shape of a man and his dog on it, a button she knew to be from one of Hiram's coats. Everyone in Wagtail thought Hiram had drowned the odious Obadiah, including Becca, who declared that she could never marry a man who had it in his soul to murder. Hiram pleaded with her, but Becca turned a cold heart to Hiram. Now, you might think that Wagtail was finished with Obadiah. After all, he was dead. But that didn't stop Obadiah's ghost from returning a few days later with a dozen rattlesnakes. I waltzed through the lobby again and peered into a room in time to see someone holding up writhing snakes. I screamed at the same time as the crowd outside. I backed up fast, my heart pounding. Surely the snakes couldn't be real. Trixie barked and dashed into the room where someone was pretending to be the ghost of Obadiah. "Trixie," I whispered, "Trixie." She turned and ran toward me, wagging her tail as though she was having fun. Rose continued the story. He brought them to the Wagtail Springs Hotel. Obadiah tossed half the snakes in the lobby and carried the remaining snakes to room number 3 on the first floor, where Hiram was tending a patient. The guests, Dr. Wraith, and his horrified family fled outside. Screams rose from inside the hotel. Where were they coming from? They must have been recorded. The front door slammed shut. I peered into the lobby but didn't see anyone. How did they do that? As long as it wasn't the snake guy, I would be fine. If those snakes were real, I didn't want to meet him. But the door to room number 3 slammed on Hiram when he tried to escape, trapping him there. A woman outside screamed. More screams arose in the crowd. I called Trixie and headed upstairs in a hurry, assuming the main part about Becca was over. Try as he might, Hiram could not open the door. He pressed himself against the window. She paused, and I could hear banging somewhere inside the hotel, and begged for help. A few sympathetic townspeople brought hammers and axes, but no one could break the glass. They tried to enter the hotel, but the Black Panther returned and sat exactly where I stand at this moment, preventing anyone from entering the inn. Trixie and I reached the top of the stairs. I wondered if I should make a brief appearance on the upper balcony. Hiram screamed as the snakes bit him. Without Obadiah's magic elixir, there was no hope of saving him. Dr. Wraith stepped forward to say, "Repent and confess, or the devil shall take thee to him for thy evil deed." You'd think Hiram might not have done just that to save his life. But Hiram cried out, "There is no evil in my heart. I curse thee, Ira Wraith. Ye and thy progeny shall never know true love, and all that ye gain in life ye shall lose. Misfortune and misery shall be the lot of the Wraiths until the day the truth be known." His pleas and cries for help grew weaker as the venom consumed him. a local hunter arrived and shot the panther, who ran into the woods to die. They were finally able to enter the inn and found the door to room 3 unlocked, with Hiram dead on the floor. The dim lights inside the hotel went out, leaving Trixie and me in the dark again, except for the lantern. Becca Wraith could not bear the sorrow or the guilt that 2 men had died because of her. I opened the glass door and waited. A scratching noise drew my attention. I raised the lantern. Trixie was digging at something near the mattress again. "Stop that," I hissed. She became a recluse in a small cottage near the cemetery, in the place now known as Wraith's Hollow. The Black Panther found her there, and she was able to heal his wounds. She was known for her herbs and poultices, and many called her a witch. The panther never again left her side. There are some who believe that Hiram or Obadiah's spirit inhabited the panther. Becca lived a long life, and the panther lived an abnormally long life, dying minutes after Becca did. To this day, Becca's ghost can be seen in the hotel. I drifted outside on the porch, trying to appear light and airy, and walking through Wagtail, wearing a ring of black roses in her white hair. Many have heard the rattle of the snakes in room number 3. But it is Hiram who is most often seen about town, searching for his beloved Becca. And on rare occasions, Becca's father, old Dr. Wraith, has been seen roaming the grounds of the Wagtail Springs Hotel. After a moment of drama-filled silence, Rose said, "And now please join us in the center of town where we'll be bobbing for apples. The merchants have some special treats for the kids, and we have tarot card readers waiting to tell you your future." I hustled inside, closed the door, and hastily changed back to my own clothes. Ugh, how would I get the white makeup off? A roll of paper towels in the bathroom had probably been left there by Rose exactly for the purpose of removing makeup. The lantern cast eerie shadows, making the hotel seem ghoulish, but the truth was that someone had spent a lot of money on refurbishing the place. The bathroom was designed in an old-fashioned style with a clawfoot tub, but there wasn't anything old about it. Everything seemed new and unused. Trixie returned to the mattress. She struggled to wedge her paw between the wall and the mattress. When that didn't work, she dug on the mattress again. "Stop that!" She went back to pawing the spot next to the wall. I finally shoved the mattress over an inch. An odd orange ball clung to the wall. Trixie pulled and pulled, wagging her tail. I didn't think she could hurt it, so I let her have her fun. I managed to wash off most of the makeup. I was packing the dress and headgear in the bag as Rose had when I heard a pop. Trixie wagged happily, carrying the orange ball in her mouth. It sprouted a concave part that looked like it was intended for suction. She'd managed to pull it off the wall. We probably shouldn't exit through the front door. Even though most people probably realized everything was staged, it seemed preferable to exit where